So, you know, we've been talking about impact, and I want to take a moment to reflect and to give you some opportunity to remember some details about impact, not necessarily from days gone by, but how God so clearly, when we can look back, so clearly weaves together the folks that he brings here. You all have personal stories that are interwoven and connected, and many of you are here because someone else who invited it, etc. But there's some folks from the past, and there's so many, we could spend 2 days talking about this, but I picked four that I want to share with you, and I'm going to read what I put together on this for two reasons. Number one, I can't remember it all. Number two, it will help keep us on time. So the first one is Dr. Henrietta Mears. Dr. Mears traveled from Minneapolis in 1928. She became the director of Christian education at the First Presbyterian Church of Hollywood, California. And soon after, she learned of Mount Hermon and a particular conference called the New Young People's Conference, which started in 1930. She sent four folks from the college department to, quote unquote, spy out the land. They came back with such glowing reports that in 1931, she sent 80 youth, and then after that, they would bring 200 each summer. Her influence and inspiration at Mount Hermon was incredibly strong for many years, in fact, all the way up until her graduation to heaven. But in 1938, she started to shift her focus slightly because she became one of the founders of Forest Home, our sister camp in Southern California. Ms. Mears was responsible for transferring Mount Hermon's conference format to that ministry, which to this day is still largely used and consisted of Bible hours in the morning, recreation in the afternoon, and evenings at their own Victory Circle. There's a long list of church leaders that Ms. Mears had a huge impact on, and all of them simply called her teacher, including Bill Bright, the founder of Campus Crusade, Richard Halverson, one-time chaplain of the U.S. Senate, Jay Rayburn, founder of Young Life, Louise Evans, the pastor of National Presbyterian Church, Washington, D.C., Dale Bruner, pastor, scholar, and teacher, Ray Steadman, pastor, author, international speaker. Interesting quote I read about Ray from Chuck Swindoll. Chuck Swindoll said, quote, "Ray Steadman is what I want to be when I grow up." And Billy Graham himself, who said, "I doubt if any other woman outside of my wife or my mother had such a marked impact on my life, as did Henrietta Mears." Speaking of Billy Graham, William Franklin Graham Jr. was among the most influential Christian leaders of the 20th century. We all know that. Graham preached to live audiences that consisted of 210 million people in more than 185 countries, where more than 3.2 million people responded to his invitation to accept Jesus as their personal Savior and came forward with those calls. Graham's estimated lifetime audience, including radio television, topped 2.2 billion. Billy Graham preached the gospel to more people in person than anyone in the history of Christianity. And on July 10th, 1958, Billy Graham stood where I stand today. He visited Mount Hermon. He was 39 years old. There were two sessions that day, and if you think parking's tight this weekend, you have no idea. There were over 4,600 folks that attended. They had to borrow buses from Felton Press, from Twin Lakes Baptist Church, Calvary Baptist Church in Los Gatos, and others. Bleachers were obtained from the local hospital, from the local high school, and they were put out. Apparently, I need a little more coffee. Okay, roll with me. All right. Bleachers were right out there, folks, and they were out there, and it was incredible. Bill Gwynn, who was the director at the time, said, "Few events in Mount Hermon's history have held the excitement of Billy Graham's visit. Many in our surrounding community met Christ that day, including 100 soldiers who came from Fort Ord, maybe the seeds of our military camperships." Looking back, one particular event, Dr. Graham's visit, which seemed routine at the time, ended up having a massive impact. It was a simple Jeep tour. The Jeep tour covered every area of Mount Hermon. But when they got up to a place called Pine Plateau, which is now the location of Ponderosa Lodge, Billy commented enthusiastically, "Boy, I love this hill. It reminds me so much of Montreat, North Carolina, his home." At that moment, much of Pine Plateau was owned by Kaiser Sand and Gravel. Mount Hermon had approached Kaiser multiple times prior to Graham's visit regarding the possibility of purchasing 10 and a half acres because that land was critical for the development of Ponderosa Lodge. Kaiser was polite most of the time, but they said, "Stop asking us. We're not interested." When Bill Gwynn revealed this fact to Billy Graham, by the way, I had the honor to talk to Bill Gwynn about this because you know how stories go, right? How much is it? Yeah, they kind of grow over time. And I said, "I really want to tell this story with, you know, fairly accurate facts." So this has been fact-checked. So when Billy Graham heard that, he said, "Stop the Jeep. Let's get out right now and claim this hill for the Lord." He prayed in belief that it would be given to Mount Hermon. 6 years later, on December 2nd, 1964, the board of Kaiser's Industry voted to grant or give those 10 and a half acres at the summit to Mount Hermon. 5 years after that, Ponderosa Lodge opened. Billy's Mount Hermon connection consisted of just one visit, but since then, the Lord has blessed tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people. That ministry zone alone today is the most consistently used site that we have. Well over 310 days a year, folks are being ministered to up there. Luis Palau Jr., an international evangelist and longtime friend of Mount Hermon. Interesting enough, Palau had a close relationship with Billy Graham. First heard Billy on a radio broadcast while still living in Argentina in 1950. He drew inspiration from him, and he later worked for Billy Graham as a Spanish translator and an evangelist. In fact, it was Billy Graham who contributed the seed money for Palau to start his own ministry, which he modeled after Graham. Since then, Palau has held hundreds of evangelistic festivals, gatherings around the world, and over the last 48 years, he has shared the message of Jesus Christ with over 25 million people in 70 nations. Luis and his wife, Pat, sent an email to us. I wasn't able to contact Henrietta or Billy to have a personal response back, but I did reach out to Luis, and they sent an email back, and I will read it to you. Mount Hermon's impact on Luis is very large. In fact, it actually started when Pat came to serve at Mount Hermon in 1960. This was a pivotal point for Pat, and it was at Mount Hermon where she committed her life to focus on ministry. It was at Mount Hermon where she decided to go to Multnomah University, where she met Luis. Luis came to Mount Hermon in 1961, his second day of being in the United States. It was Ray Steadman who brought Luis to Mount Hermon and helped plant the seed developed into his love and connection with this ministry that continues to this very day. Mount Hermon has also had a special place for their whole family. Our boys love coming there, and after each one got married, it was important for them to bring their wife and children to Mount Hermon. Some one-line quotes from their email, quote, "I love the outstanding pastors that are invited to speak and their different styles. This is a serious Bible teaching place, and it's also great fun. At Mount Hermon, the gospel is solid, basic Christian doctrine. It's a classy place. Lifelong friends have been made there. We've gained prayer partners for a lifetime, and many have come to faith through the teaching there." As most of you know, on Thursday, January 18th, of this year, Luis Palau shared that he has stage 4 lung cancer. You can be praying for Luis. I heard last night from a good friend that he actually is getting very encouraging results back from the doctors regarding the cancer. But we all know stage 4 is significant. So be praying for Luis and the entire Palau family at this difficult time. Last but not least, Charles Roselle Chuck Swindoll. As a pastor, author, and preacher, in 1979, Chuck created Insight for Living, which today airs on more than 2,000 radio stations around the world. He is the author of more than 70 books. Christianity Today named Swindoll one of the 25 most influential preachers of the past 50 years. FYI, Chuck will be here teaching again this summer, Family Camp 8. We're all sold out, but just thought you'd want to know. Okay. Here's some fun facts you might want to know. Chuck suffered from severe stuttering early in his life, and he credits his high school drama teacher for helping him overcome that. After graduating from high school, he studied mechanical engineering. He served in the U.S. Marine Corps. After his honorable discharge in 59, he attended Dallas Theological Seminary, where he graduated magna cum laude 4 years later. And for 33 consecutive years, Chuck held their Insight for Living summer conferences right here at Mount Hermon. I sent an email to Chuck telling him what we were going to do and asking if he would consider just sharing a couple things. I told him we had plenty of material and we know he's a busy guy. Less than 2 hours later, he sent this, which was amazing to me, and I'm going to read it to you. We were involved in family camps, special events, and Insight for Living summer retreats for 33 consecutive years. As they were growing up, our kids didn't think a summer was complete without driving up and spending a week or more at Mount Hermon. Many of our fondest family moments occurred along the trails, among the redwoods, in our cabin, eating gritty hot dogs at the beach, and singing around the campfire at Victory Circle. Mount Hermon allowed us to have our own Insight for Living Week for many years, where we were able to touch the lives of our listeners, enjoy eating and laughing together, as well as getting into God's Word every single day. Many families were drawn closer together during these significant times. One year, Cynthia and I rode my Harley from our home up to Mount Hermon with six other friends on their Harleys. I happen to know those six other friends were the members of the group Brush Arbor. Another little factoid, Brush Arbor will be back this summer for a concert. Might be fun to come. We were roaring into Mount Hermon like a pack of Hell's Angels as mothers grabbed their children and dads stared at us, not having a clue who's invading our otherwise quiet and peaceful campground. One year, we invited Dennis Gurnsney to share the speaking times with me, and we had a blast. After climbing up the hill to have pancakes one morning, he and I brought about a dozen of the pancakes back with us. And during the get acquainted time, we started throwing them out in the auditorium like frisbees. Yep. People were loving it. Folks caught them. They'd throw them back. One of the pancakes hit an older lady right in the face. She was laughing like crazy. Bill Gwynn came up to me later and said, "That's one of our highest donors who's actually visiting today." Yeah. But I love this. He concludes by saying, "To this day, when our..." I don't know why this moves. Okay. "To this day, when our family gets together and starts reflecting on, quote unquote, our greatest memories, several stories from Mount Hermon inevitably emerge from our now adult kids. This wonderful place represents a museum of memories for the Swindoll family." It's just an amazing wordsmith. A museum of memories. A place where each of us had our walk with Christ strengthened and our relationship with each other deepened. Everyone in this room can relate to that. So, God is our foundation, but there's a lot of layers that He's allowed to be built. These four are just part of those cornerstones that we all have the privilege of standing on today. Thank you.
Thank you, JR, for walking us through what a great history this is. And actually, since Chuck's week is sold out, we should borrow those hospital bleachers because they make great bleachers, those hospitals, and get them out there for the overflow. I'll work on that. Okay. Anyway, but speaking of history, it's hard to speak of Mount Hermon history without starting at Redwood Camp. Many of you guys know that in 1906, when we began, that it began at Redwood Camp. That was the original ministry location that we had, our longest running and ministry site that we have here at Mount Hermon. And many of you know, it's also what we like to call our most rustic location as well in terms of facilities. But the ministry that happens there, how many Redwood Camp, either campers or staff, do we have? Yeah, a lot of folks here in this room. And so the ministry that happens there today, even in 2018, is just as significant and just as meaningful as it ever has been, in spite of the rustic nature of what's going on there. But one of the things that's happening that's really neat, and JR kind of talked about this before, is some of the transformation that's going to be happening with the facility down at Redwood Camp in this upcoming year. Really, I really believe it sets us up for decades of future use so that we can continue to have that as just a really vital ministry site and location. And so I thought, who better to speak to what it will actually mean for the ministry down there, the Ron Taylor. Ron is our director of Redwood Camp and overseeing that ministry right now, and has been associated with that camp for almost 25 years now. He knows that ministry and that facility probably better than any other single person. And so I'm going to turn it over to Ron and let him share a little bit about what these facility renovations are going to mean down there.
All right, thank you, Jeremy. It is good to be here. It's good to be back. If you recall, I was the director at Redwood Camp from 1995 to 2009, and then was at Felton Bible Church for a number of years, and then came back last summer and will be remaining for this summer. And it's a delight to be back. I'm grateful to be a part of this tremendous work that God is doing. And JR, as you were talking about Chuck Swindoll, and we know Chuck Swindoll a lot by the distinctiveness of his voice, both in his features and in the volume. And so one time I was up here at Conference Center taking care of some business, and I called my wife, was talking to her on the phone, and lo and behold, whose voice did I hear in the background? Chuck Swindoll. Yes, he was out there picking blackberries, having one of those family memories, and just having a good old time. You could tell. I could hear the laughter in his voice as he was picking the berries and moving on. So let me share just a few minutes about the significance of what these cabins will mean. And before we do, though, yesterday in our prayer time, a comment, Bill Fernald made a comment as he was releasing us to go to our small groups. And that comment was this, as the significance of what prayer is going in the dark. We go in the dark trusting God. I don't know if you remember that, those of you who were here. And that was just before we were released. And it struck me because that fits so well with what God had put in my heart to share this morning. It was in the dark one night when I was walking from lower camp, heading up to upper camp. I was in upper camp where the camp house was. It was a full day, another one of those full days in the midst of the summer. And as I'm walking up through cabins 11 to 15, I encounter a group of young men in prayer. And not just bowed heads, but arms upon shoulders in prayer, talking with the Father about their own hearts and about the hearts of the campers that God had entrusted to them. It was one of those moments when you stop and reflect. It's a picture of what God is doing. And he does most of his movement. Isn't it the case that he moves in our hearts and then our hearts are moved to action with our hands and our feet? What I realized as I thought about that moment and reflected and just watched and tried to listen in for a moment, I recount that those counselors were there because they had desire to serve. And in their desire to serve, God gave them hearts that care. And while they were caring, they encountered needs. And encountering needs, they realize how dependent they are upon God, and they trust in him. And by going to prayer, God gives direction, he gives wisdom, and he makes provision. And in the course of doing so, they go back out to serve. And as they go back out to serve, they acquire caring hearts. You get the cycle. It just goes on and on and on. And that's been true at Mount Hermon, as we've been sharing in the course of this very short weekend, that God continues to move us to care, to respond to needs, and then put feet to the action God prompts us to take in so many different ways. It's a pretty awesome participation that we can have, isn't it? To share in the work that God is doing in human hearts, using the resources that he makes available to us. That's a powerful thing. It's a beautiful thing. And it's true down at Redwood Camp. I have seen it, not necessarily seen it, I've read of it, but I've seen it in my time period here. And as I served here, I realized that there is a movement of the Spirit that's going on that creates opportunity. It is a movement of the Spirit. I put the emphasis on that because it's all about God. And as we surrender our hearts, then something happens. We can't stop it. It just overflows. That's been my experience. And as I read through the rings of the Redwoods, those who came before me, those who set the legacy that I have had the opportunity to enjoy as one of those who've participated in what God is doing at Redwood Camp, it's a beautiful thing. And so, as I read through, I discovered once again and appreciated once again that there were servants back in the mid-50s who, while serving, acquired caring hearts. And acquiring caring hearts realized a need. And the existing cabins or whatever structures they had at that point were not functioning well, were not serving the needs well. And what they do, they go into prayer. And then they acquired wisdom and resource. And throughout the course of the mid-1950s, the existing cabins were built by individual churches with the funds and the resource and the actual work done by volunteer and those cabins. And think about that. They weren't all built at one time. They were built over a time period, about 5 years. And in that time period, 60 plus years since that time, think about that. 8 children per cabin over that time period. I figured out very briefly about 10,000 per cabin in that time period. So, and if you add 20, then it just keeps on going. Yeah, 10,000. That's a lot of opportunity right there. And that was in the 50s. But then as they went out to serve once again, with caring hearts, they found needs. And then in 1960-61, a new dining facility was built. And as they went out to serve and to pray and to care and to ask the Father, then the Lord provided the next building, the trading post. And then after going out and serving and caring and taking those needs to the Lord built a new meeting room in 1974. And the most recent, after caring and serving and responding to needs, we had the pavilion just 2 years ago, 2016. And here we are today. Now, let's go back to those 5 young men praying in the middle of the night, arms on shoulders, huddled in prayer, perhaps the most powerful thing. How many minutes did it take for them to do that? Just a few minutes. They did that regularly, though, by the way. That's a regular practice that happens down at Redwood Camp. It's not necessarily a seen thing. It oftentimes does happen in the dark, but it's a powerful thing. And our desire is that no matter what place a child or staff member, I must emphasize, comes into Redwood Camp, our heart and desire is that they move beyond that to a deeper walk with Christ, no matter what place they're at, to wherever they are today. And so, as we conclude this part, I'm going to invite us to raise our hands, raise both arms, and put them around the shoulders of the people next to you. Yeah? And I'd like to ask us all to bow our heads. And this is going to be not five people, but all of us right here. This is going to be a big holy huddle. And I'd like to ask us to bow our heads. And let me just say a couple words of prayer. Let's bow our heads. Our Father in heaven, we come to you because you called us. And we have responded. And you have blessed us. And we have been filled up, not so that we can contain it to ourselves, but so that we can give it out to others. God, you are so good. You are so loving. In fact, so loving. Your love is bigger than the Pacific Ocean, and we thank you for this love, and we believe in the power of your love. That's why we're here. And so thank you for this opportunity you have laid before us, Father, to once again to make an improvement so that we could serve you better and serve those who come to us better, so that we could care better, we can respond to need better, and we can love you better, and that these cabins will then last for another 60, 70, 80 years. You are so good. And as one song says, you are beautiful. Your name is beautiful. In Jesus' name we pray this. Amen. Thank you.
Ron, thank you so much for that reminder of what's been going on from the beginning of Redwood Camp up until now. I love Ron. Ron and I started at Mount Hermon the very same year, so it has been such a privilege to serve with Ron through those many years. Well, I'm going to talk to you a little about now about what's going to happen down there at Redwood Camp with those cabins. As Ron shared, we've been working on a master plan for Redwood Camp for almost 20 years now. I know as long as I've been here, we've been talking about things we want to do at Redwood Camp, the cabins, the other facilities, and we were very grateful to have started that master plan with the pavilion a couple years ago, and that was a very successful project, and has turned out to just to be an amazing facility that is used by the kids down there and the guests that are there in the wintertime as well. But now it's time to turn our attention to those cabins. Like Ron said, those cabins that are there right now were built in 1953 with the construction of those cabins. And as he said, they didn't do them all at once. They sort of, would do a few. Before that, there was a platform and a tent. And that was built, I believe, back in the 20s. And so there was a quote in the Rings of the Redwoods that some of you might have read. It says, the kids would jump out of their bunks and go through the floor. They said, when that started happening, we knew we had to do something. And then there's another quote that I love that said, those cabins were just plain worn out, right? And so they decided to build new cabins, and one of the quote was, these cabins are going to be really nice. They're going to have electricity, they're going to have heat, and it's all going to come from one 100-watt light bulb. So obviously there wasn't going to be any heat, but so, and those cabins have lasted us now 65 years, and so over time, we've had ideas about what we're going to do down there. Are we going to tear them all down? Are we going to build new ones? Are we going to build bigger ones? And so we've settled on an idea that I think everybody has bought into and everybody loves, is that we're actually going to restore. And we're going to try to restore what's down there, use what we have, because actually, they're not in too bad a shape. After 65 years old, you think, hey, those things are worn out. But they're not. They still have some redeeming features, and we want to honor that. And so what we're going to try to do is work with what we've got down there. And it makes sense both from an economical standpoint and just from a constructability standpoint of being able to work down in Redwood Camp. It's a very small site, and so there's not a whole lot you can do down there. So what we're going to do is the plan is to create bathrooms in the cabins, not really in the cabins, but between the cabins. Right now, when the kids have to get up in the middle of the night to go to the restroom, they have to go to the bathhouses. Well, now there's a camping code now that the kids and a counselor cannot go to the restroom alone. So when a kid has to get up in the middle of the night, he has to wake up the counselor, and then the counselor has to wake up another kid, and then the three of them have to go down to the bathhouse. So you can imagine. And then another counselor has to watch the other cabin. So you can imagine if this goes on a couple times a night, nobody gets any sleep. So, especially the counselor, right? So the need was, hey, we have to figure out a way to allow people to, you know, get up in the middle of the night, use the restroom in the cabin. So what we've done is creatively, we figured out how to put a restroom in between two cabins. So take two existing cabins where we can, put a restroom facility in between there. Now it's only going to be just a single toilet and a sink because it's just for overnight, during the night use. And so that'll provide a way for anybody to get up during the middle of the night, go use the restroom, come back, not have to wake anybody up. Everybody gets a good night's sleep. So that's one of the plans. The other plan will be to connect two cabins. And so we'll be able to connect two cabins together, kind of have a multi-cabin situation down there where if a counselor has to leave, then the other counselor has the ability to oversee those two cabins. So it kind of helps, you know, with the functionality of how they program down at Redwood Camp. So we're going to break it up into two sections. One section will be the girls' section, and that'll be down by where the girls' restroom is. And then we're going to create kind of a new village up above. Above there, there used to be five cabins up above, and they were boys' cabins. Then the girls' cabins were down below, and then there was five other cabins down there for the guys. So this is going to allow us to create a total. The girls' cabins are going to be down below, next to the girls' bathhouse, and then we're going to create a new village up above. Now, what that means is we're going to have the five existing cabins that are up there, and we're going to connect onto those a bathroom and a new cabin. And so that'll be 10 cabins up there for the guys, and then the 10 cabins down below for the gals. And then each will have their own shower and bathhouse facility. Now, what that does also is that frees up five of the existing cabins that the guys are in, cabins 11 through 15, and then they can be used for multi-use. They can be used for storage. They can be used for summer staff, kind of maybe create a summer staff village. So it just kind of opens up some opportunities for Ron and his staff to kind of utilize that facility a lot better. So we think it's a win-win, and we get to use what we already have and make it better, restore what's there, improve it, and then hopefully make that last for the next 50 years. So that's our plan. Now, it's not only a plan, it's actually going to happen. You are the first, I think, the first group to know that we're actually, the plans are completed. This is not something that we're just dreaming up. The plans have been completed. We're actually ready to submit these next Tuesday. So these will go to the county planning department next Tuesday for approval so that we can start constructing August 20th. August 20th is our target to start this project. Yeah. And so I want you to all to be praying about that because it's a tight window. If we submit these on Tuesday, that gives us about 3 months to get the approvals and then get everything lined up to start August 20th, which is right after summer. And so welcome you to be praying about that, just so we can get that through the county in 3 months, very aggressive. But when you present the need, the Lord supplies. And so we feel really good about going forward with this. So please prayerfully consider, you know, being a part of it and praying for it so that we can get started on August 20th. Well, that's enough about Redwood Camp, a project that's going to happen. I want to talk to you a little bit now about a project that is happening, and that's our Lakeside 600-700 renovation that we're going through right now, and I'd like to invite Brian Hayes up to talk a little bit about that.
Well, good morning. It was a year ago, my first AIM last year, by the way, it was a year ago that I was standing here and we unveiled about Tommy's crew. Many of you were here. I saw your show of hands last night, but there was just very few that weren't here. So you know of Tommy Beadle. We thought it was a rather crazy, rather ambitious project that he put before us, a dream. So I'm here to report to you that after, in that meeting last year, we said, you know, Lord willing, and by God's grace and his people stepping alongside of us, we're going to tackle 600 and 700. So we have done that, and the pictures are already ahead of us here. We said yes to that. So there are many, many things that I can share about the project. I'm going to let Dale talk about some of the specifics here in a minute, but what you need to hear is the intertwining, what I've heard throughout this weekend, just the intertwining of facilities and ministry. We know that facilities aren't critical for God and the Holy Spirit to do his work here, but they're vitally important to give us a place to sit, these sacred spaces around the property. And so I have the privilege of working with guys like Dale, a facility engineer here. I worked with him 25 years ago. You should hear this guy's heart and his passion for what he does. And I have the joy of serving with this great guy and everybody else you've seen just to come alongside and support and help resource and steward the funds that have been given through your generosity. So this project got going just by the skin of its teeth. We pulled permits this year for this project. It was very extensive. We had some ADA rooms I'm going to let him talk about again. But we, to the very last hour before the project needed to start, Dale was down at the county getting the permit on Friday evening, probably just as the counter was closing. And construction was starting that very next day. Had no permit. We had 80 guys coming with Tommy this year. So they were already on their way up here, so there was no turning back. We said, come on up. And so I'm going to let Dale share a little bit about some of the specifics, and we'll kind of go back and forth here a little bit and tell you a little more about the exciting projects that's underway right now, this very minute.
Yeah, it was a pretty intense moment when you've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line and people waiting to start the project. And you know you only have until June 17th, right? There's like no extra day. It's June 17th, must be done. And we've already bought everything, right? Because you got to buy stuff months in advance. And so we've got material on, you know, purchased and coming and no permit. And we're like, we're trusting God. We're moving ahead and we're trusting God. And it was, we were going to be starting on the Monday. It was Friday at noon. I got the call from the county. Okay, come down and pick up your permit. And there was a big sigh of relief, trust me, because I hadn't told Mike yet, right, that we didn't have a permit. So sometimes it's just better not to know, okay? And this is how God works around here. It's just amazing. And so anyway, we got started on time, and we were able to do a significant amount of the work prior to Tommy's crew showing up. And so we were able to, with the partnership of Bogart Construction, who is a local contractor and has history at Mount Hermon. I mean, Bogart has been working at Mount Hermon, I don't know, probably 40 years at least. And so through their partnership, coming in early, being able to get into those rooms, because now we got 40, not just 20, now we got 40 rooms that we got to get done before summer starts. So they came in, did a significant amount of demolition and preparation for Tommy's crew, then to come in, and they specialize in doing finishes and a lot of other work. And so by getting, you know, 65 guys to come in for a week, you can get a lot done, and which we did. Tommy's crew comes in, and he gets a significant amount of the work done, so that just helps us then finish off everything in the following week. So amazing start to that project, and has got us to a point now where we're looking, we're going to finish, Mike, don't worry, we're going to finish. It's looking good.
We're going to finish, Dale, for sure.
For sure.
He said on time. Unfortunately, it's not on budget. No surprise, if any of you have done work around your home, you know that sometimes once you start poking and prying and taking off and giving facelifts, you come upon some surprises. And certainly this project was full of them, in a good way, I suppose. One of the ironic things, though, one of the main key entry areas to access that lodge for the, there actually were 80 workers, one gal, 79 guys with Tommy's crew, and about 20, 30 other contractors here with us, subcontractors. 100 people using one flight of stairs going up and down with carrying sacks of mortar mix, tile, sheetrock. It was unbelievable. So we had to take a bridge out. A bridge has been replaced as part of one of the entrances into the 600 building. Upon further poking and prying, we learned, and this is what many of you have seen a short video of that Carrie and JR did, we learned that the decks on the backside had extensive work that was needed. So praise God, we came upon that and were able to make the repairs. So I was out there just during this break going out and on site as Dale and I spend every day since April 9th out there working hard. Those guys are right there doing it, tidying up, buttoning up those projects so that we can have a safe, functioning, fully functioning facility for the summer.
The other exciting thing that we've been able to do as part of this project is to provide two fully accessible rooms. And so in the 600 building, rooms 620 and 621 now will be fully accessible. The bathrooms have been enlarged and ADA rooms. And along with that, there'll be additional parking spaces out back behind the Welcome Center, two additional ADA parking spaces that then will serve those rooms, and then a path of travel to get you down to those rooms. So that's been a huge improvement. It's something we've been wanting to do for a long, long time. And it is challenging when you live on a mountain to try to create flat spaces. But we've been able to do it, and it's going to turn out great, and it looks wonderful. The other thing we've been able to do, and you know, as you get into a project, it kind of just grows, you know, and amazing things start happening. So we were able to do some enhancements over by Lakeside Lodge, and we're going to have a nice fire pit out there, just like we've done some fire pits here in the mall area, and they're just an amazing. It just kind of transforms a space, and it's an inviting thing now. People love to congregate around the fire pits. So we've been able to do one over there by Lakeside Lounge, and that's going to make it an amazing space.
Yeah, and this is all possible through your giving and support, obviously. So we are so grateful for that. We wouldn't be where we are in this project and other things that are going on, the Redwood Camp cabins and all these exciting things going on. So the real important story behind all of this, and we introduced Tommy last time and you saw a video, but just getting a chance to work alongside him for a week when he's here, and both of us deal with him on the phone and texting and throughout the year planning for this, believe me. But when you get the chance to talk to him, as I did a lot that one week when he was here in April 15th, he can't help but well up every time he starts talking about Mount Hermon, for what it's meant for he and his family and his generations before him, and also what it means for his guys when he comes here. Imagine 80 guys that he invite, one gal, excuse me, one very strong gal. No differential there, carrying her load. Imagine, though, the impact that he is making on there. I mean, his heart and passion, he's doing this as a place here just to say, I want to bring my guy. This is just an excuse for what he lives out every day with his crew. So we put together, we had some conversation, and we had a chance to talk to some of his guys when he was here, just to talk about that relationship and the dynamic between Tommy and his workers. Before we show that, because I know that once we show this, I'm going to sit down, but I want to just express to you something challenging. As we sat here last year and talked about, imagine next year doing two buildings. You know, we thought it was crazy, and here we are. They're going to be done. Carpet's going to be done next week. The doors are being hung today. But imagine that dream, that vision. So I'm going to share another one for you. You've heard about Redwood Camp, and you're going to be the first people again probably to hear this. So hopefully it's okay, Mike. I think Mike's heard about this before. And you can always put Lord willing on it, so you always have that. right?
You got that disclaimer, all right, Lord willing.
All right, Lord. So many of you have been a part of the Lakeside Project, stayed in the, or the projects, the Lakeside lodging.
Renovations.
Renovations, thank you, bleachers. This is terrible.
Do you want me to go ahead?
I'll take it in.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
So Laurel, Tommy's on a roll. It seems to get bigger and better every year. He is not stopping, that's for sure. He will continue to push us in positive ways towards improving and taking care of this treasured gift that we call Mount Hermon. It is a real honor to steward that. So when you have people like that come along and encourage you and fund you and propel you, it's compelling. So next year, 2019, the project for April, we're going into Laurel, take out 1, 2, and 300 renovation. It's 30 rooms. So can you imagine in 3 years, 4 years, add Gwen to that, those 4 years, complete renovation of all those rooms through the...
Yes. And that will be the majority of the hotel rooms that we have here will have be completed. And so that's just amazing. I mean, it gives me chills because we haven't really even started the capital campaign yet. And God is he's ahead of us. He's in front of us, you know, and getting these things done right before our eyes. So I'm excited because I'm taking a vacation in right about that time. So this is going to be amazing. Thank you, Brian.
You are. Sure you
yeah.
are.
This is great.
I'm going with you, by the way. So let's cue up this video again. As fun as it is, as challenging as it is, this is all about that relationship and Tommy's love for his guys. So let's take a look at what they have to say.
Mount Hermon has helped me personally stay connected to the Lord. I've really tried to give the talents that I have to Mount Hermon so that people can continue to come back and have this magical experience and transform their lives. I've been tremendously blessed in my life, and so how can I be a blessing to others? The small things that I can do that can have impact, direct impact on other people's lives is this is a place that I think that I can make those impacts. It was my original vision to complete all 60 rooms in Lakeside, and so I feel like we're doing that by coming back this year. So the vision has grown from just redoing Lakeside to helping Mount Hermon redo the majority of their accommodations. And as I said, I'm pushing Mount Hermon to say what's next. More than just the vision of taking care of these rooms and remodeling it is really the time with the guys here.
Tommy, he's an amazing person. He's the model to follow, treat you as family. He means a lot for us.
Tommy is always one of the guys, you know. We don't feel like he's our boss. Well, he's our boss, but he doesn't make us feel like that, you know. He's just one of the guys.
Every time we come over here, we want to get everything done. We don't want to leave nothing behind. Everyone works like a family over here. So if someone needs something, we work together and we make it happen.
You know, everybody help each other, everybody, you know, do something for each other. What we do right here is amazing. You know, we do something for our community, we do something for everybody. They come all over the places.
My kids, they love it. The place really, really nice, really quiet, really enjoyable. Well, this year we get to come back and enjoy more the place.
You know, these guys really depend on me for their work because they feel connected to me. They don't want to lose their livelihoods. The job I have is to make sure that to build these relationships with people so that they, so that I can depend on them. They can depend on me. I want people to know my integrity. It's very important to me. I want the values that I have to show through. I want them to know that I cared about them and that I served them. I think for me, it's important that people know that Mount Hermon's heart's in the right place. And the work they're doing here is important, and that's a place that I want to support, that knows what they are, knows what they're good at. They really want to serve people as well. They're making this place the best that it can be to continue to transform lives. I feel like I've jumped full into this pool with Mount Hermon, both feet. One of my favorite leadership quotes is that leadership is not a title to be gained, it's a service to be given. And so I just want my guys to know my values and that at the end of the day, that I was there to serve them.
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm never going to get tired of hearing that story. And I got to say, as a staff member, it is so energizing and encouraging for us when we see Tommy come here with his passion for not only remodeling rooms, but for investing in the lives of the guys who work for him. It is absolutely amazing and energizes us. And we are excited to welcome that 80-person crew and their families back for Hispanic Family Camp this summer. And we're excited to see what the Lord is going to do and how he's going to work in their lives. We're so excited about all the room remodels that are happening. I'm so grateful that Mike and the leadership have prioritized guest lodging upgrades and put that at the forefront of what is needed and necessary. We're really excited to see what happens with that in the next few years. In the next few minutes that I have up here, I'm excited to share with you another organizational priority that Mount Hermon has really put at the forefront that is a huge blessing to me personally, because that is the area of staff care. Mike cares so deeply for our staff, and the board, Mike, and the executive team show that every day. And I gotta say, as a staff member and on behalf of all the staff members in this room, we feel loved, we feel valued, we feel cared for. And one of the biggest ways that Mount Hermon shows that to their staff is through the staff housing program. So many of you received a letter a couple months ago talking about our staff housing program and how it blesses our staff and some of the needs that we have for that. A lot of people don't know that Mount Hermon actually owns about 80 homes in the neighborhood here. Okay, so many of you have stayed in some of those cabins during family camp. You've had been in our cabins. Many of you are staying in them this weekend. A big chunk of those houses that we own are used for guest lodging. But about 55 of those houses are used for our staff. And it is such a blessing for our staff, I speak from personal experience, to be in these houses. Because what staff housing means is that Mount Hermon rents the houses to the staff at a discounted rate, which enables us to afford to live in this area. I think we all know what's happening with the Bay Area real estate market right now, right? Super fun. There was a study done by an organization in New Zealand last year. They published it just last fall. And this organization looked at housing markets all over the world, and they compared average house price with average household income in that area. And they were trying to determine what are the most and the least affordable places to live. And guess which area they deemed was the least affordable place to live in the whole United States? Santa Cruz, California. We're number one. Congratulations, we did it. Santa Cruz County, the least affordable place to live in the entire United States. So what staff housing allows is it allows for our staff to be here and to afford to live here without the pressures of rising rent prices, without the pressure of having to find a house in the local area, because Mount Hermon provides that for us. I've been the beneficiary of this ever since I was on staff as an intern. I was given housing and then have been full-time staff for 6 years and have been blessed to be in staff housing the entire time. I started out in a beautiful little 400 square foot studio cabin called Poppy, which was the best bachelor pad ever, and it was amazing. But something important happened in my life last summer. I got married. And so my wife and I got married in August, and she moved into my beautiful 400 square foot studio cabin. And it was wonderful. Every moment together, building our relationship strong. It was great. I love you, sweetheart. And fortunately, a few months later, another larger staff house opened up, and Mount Hermon invited us to move. And so we're now living just behind the field house in a beautiful little house that we love, and there's us in front of it right there. It is such a blessing to be in staff housing. I can't communicate that enough to our staff. It is such a blessing for us. And I'm going to call up my good friend, Renee Robertson. Renee's story with staff housing and the blessing that it is really exemplifies what this means to our staff. Renee works in our accounting department. Her unofficial title is most popular person at Mount Hermon, 2 days a month.
Just twice a month.
Twice a month. Renee's in charge of payroll. We love Renee. We love Renee all the time, every day, and we especially love Renee on the 9th and on the 24th. So Renee, thank you for joining us. We're gonna get to know a little bit about Renee's story and her staff housing journey. So Renee, welcome.
Thank you.
Could you start out telling us, how did you first get involved at Mount Hermon? What did that look like?
Definitely. So my story is a little bit different than I feel like the majority of staff here, that I knew nothing about Mount Hermon before I moved to Santa Cruz 8.5 years ago with a friend. And the house that we ended up renting was a privately owned house in Mount Hermon. And I was one of those people that Nate was talking about last night that come into Mount Hermon never having been a camper, thinking, what is this place? So through living here and starting to get to know some of the staff, while I was going for my accounting degree at Cabrillo, got a job in the dining hall as a server and worked in there while I was getting my degree. And when I graduated, I was able to join the internship program in the accounting department for 2 years and actually got to intern for a year with Andrew.
It was a party year, let me tell you. That was a good one. But the most important part of that journey that she forgot to tell is she worked in the bakery for a summer. So do you enjoy the donuts? That's her. Having a friend who's a baker is a valuable thing. Let me tell you, there's always treats at Renee's desk. And we are grateful for that. So you went from dining staff, bakery most importantly, interning, and then tell us about your transition into working full-time at Mount Hermon.
Definitely. So the intern program was an amazing experience, very impactful in my life, learning my identity in Christ, my identity in God's kingdom, and even on staff here. It was a very cool experience that I was able to have coming to the Associates Prayer Day in my second year as an intern and actually bringing a prayer request of, I don't know where I'm going to be when this year ends as an intern. Can I have some prayer about where God might lead me? I really love Mount Hermon and I want to stay here. But at the time there wasn't a position available. And I was very blessed through that prayer time and through the coming months to be able to have a full-time position open up for me in the accounting department. So I was able to move straight into a full-time position, thanks in large part to the prayers and support from you guys.
So we are grateful. Thank you for praying for her. It worked, and she's here, and we love it. So part of the internship program is that housing is provided for our interns. And so when you went from intern to full-time, though, there wasn't a staff house available for you. So tell us about what that process was like of finding housing in the area.
So from when I moved to Santa Cruz 8.5 years ago, I have moved 15 times. Most of those have been because what was available, what was affordable, was usually like a 9-month lease or just available in the summer, or it was so expensive that I could only afford it for a short period of time. So just from when I finished my internship, I've been in Ben Lomond 2 different times. I've been in Scotts Valley. I've been in private rentals in Mount Hermon 2 times. So just a little bit of back and forth and sometimes living out of boxes and making it work.
Yeah, so she's been bouncing around quite a bit, and that's one of the struggles that we find in our area is not only the cost of housing, but there's hardly any availability. So sometimes if you're looking for a place and you say, well, that's only available for 6 months, but I have to take it because there's nothing else available. And I think that's a lot of what Renee experienced, was needing to take whatever was there for whatever period of time and living in boxes for a while. Yeah. But then last fall, a house became available. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So the struggles of moving back and forth, they're kind of easy to identify. But one thing that I did want to say is working in Mount Hermon is unlike anything else. If I could stay here for the rest of my life, I think I might. And So all of those housing transitions, they're worth it to be able to stay. But to be able to have something open up in this staff housing, to be able to move into Poppy has been a fantastic transition.
So she's now living where I lived. So we have that special fun connection. We both have loved that place. And so you moved into Poppy in January. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a bachelor pad when I was there. And Renee is slightly more refined than I am. And one of the really cool things that's happening with staff housing is not only are we seeking to increase the number of staff housing units, but the quality of staff housing units. And it has been such a blessing that the leadership is investing in remodeling a lot of the units and upgrading them. So Renee, tell us a little bit about some of the upgrades that happened right before you moved in.
Well, yes, it was definitely more of a bachelor pad before I moved in. So I did have to wait a couple more months for the work, but I'm so happy. One of the biggest things that you can see in this picture, the stove oven beforehand was a 20-inch, which is about two-thirds the size of a full-size oven.
Great for frozen pizza.
Great just for a bachelor.
I'm just saying.
Not so great for a baker. So in that transition, they were able to get me a full-size oven, which includes a microwave that has ventilation, which is amazing. It's a game changer for sure. They completely remodeled the bathroom, gutted it entirely, took out a wall so that they could get in there and really go to town. They were able to clean up a lot of things, close off some windows, and rebuild the shower. And then the bedroom, there is no storage in that house. It is 400 square feet of just walls and floor. But they were able to put in some shelving and a little bit of a closet for me, and also completely redo the floors. They ripped out all the carpet and put in some really nice wood-looking floors that have been really great.
Yeah, it's so great to see it, and we're grateful to Dale and to Brian and our whole facilities team for prioritizing that and for loving and serving our staff in that way.
Definitely got some cookies when I moved in.
Always good to do nice things for a baker. So Renee, just kind of as the last thing, could you tell us what does it mean for you to be in staff housing?
Staff housing means stability. It means hopefully not having to move again for a long time. It means not having to live paycheck to paycheck to be able to live in Santa Cruz and work at Mount Hermon. It means building community. I love having people over and just sharing our lives over food, over good conversation, and just spending really good quality time together. And it's just so conducive to be able to have a house in Mount Hermon, to have people come over. I have some really awesome neighbors that are also staff in staff housing. And so it's really cool to be able to know the people that I live next to and share life with them. And for all of this, I wouldn't be here if it weren't directly for everybody in this room. Your prayers and your financial support, they're what are keeping me here. I really think that I don't know how much longer I would have been able to maintain living and working here. And so it means the absolute world to me that I'm able to stay for the foreseeable future, Lord willing. And so I just want to thank every single person in this room for everything that you do for our staff, for Mount Hermon, to keep it running. And just your love for this place is really a blessing.
And Renee, thank you for sharing with us. And we love you. And we hope that you will be here forever.
Aren't we blessed with a great staff here? Yeah. We're also blessed to be a part of a ministry that is truly about impact of lives for the Lord, impact of our staff, impact of our community. I think of the word impact, I think of the definition of striking of one thing against another. It's forceful contact. It's a collision. I remember years ago when I was a pastor of college-age students when I was in seminary, and we had a guy in our group named Shane, and Shane was a big dude. He was an offensive lineman for a college football team, and he was very excited because he bought a particular morning a brand new pickup truck, and he'd been saving money for this pickup truck, and so after he got it, I was very honored because he drove to the church to show me. And he said, Mike, do you want to get in and go for a drive? I'm like, absolutely. Let's get in your new rig, you know. And so here's Big Shane, and we're driving, and this is Whittier, California. And we get on Whittier Boulevard, and we're going to take a left. And he's in a left-hand turn lane, stopped, not in the middle of the intersection, just in the left-hand turn lane. And as we're waiting to turn left, I see down Whittier Boulevard this car going super fast and just careening in and out of traffic very dangerously. I said, check out that car. And that car kept coming closer to us, closer to us, closer to us. And then it went to take a left right in front of us, lost control, and bam, head on right into us. Impact. He had just bought the car hours before. The front was all smashed up. Somehow we weren't hurt. Somehow the guy who was driving and the guy next to him were not hurt. We get out of the car, the truck. They get out of their car. The guy who was driving begins to yell at Shane and say this was his fault. Even though we were parked, stopped, I should say, to turn left, hadn't moved. And then Shane was about to have another form of impact, which I got in the middle of because that guy would have been toast. Impact. And this ministry is where God takes a life and he collides his love with a person's need for his love, and they're changed forever. I think you get the sense of why you're even here is because you believe in the impact of this ministry. I know that Jane and I have been deeply impacted by this place. A few months ago, we had a staff prayer day. It was a special day, and I had asked certain staff members to pray at a prayer gathering we had to start off the morning. And I also asked some of our retired veterans to pray. Dave Talbot, Ken Harrower, Rhonda Moeller, and Don Rosemley, along with some other staff who prayed that morning. And when Don prayed, he said something that really struck me. In fact, I asked him, because he had written down his prayer, if I could have the notes from it. And in there, Don said, camp is fun, but it's not a game. And I thought, that's a good line for us. This is a lot of fun, but it's not a game. In fact, we take it very seriously what happens here, because we're representing the Lord, and because eternity is at stake. Eternity's at stake. Now, I'm going to share with you for a few minutes some of the behind-the-scenes things that we have been working on for greater impact. Some of them I'll just briefly go over because you've already heard the nuts and bolts of them. But I want you guys to know, because you're the key investors in this kingdom work, of some of the things that you might hear a little bit about or see, and you might wonder a little bit about them, or maybe you have no clue, which is fine, but now you will have a clue with regards to things that we've been doing around here. We, a year and a half ago, our staff executive team came up with 4 strategic initiatives that we've begun working on, and we've been focused on those for the last 4 years, along with our board. We chose these 4 areas because we knew all of them needed to be focuses, and what's amazing about this, a year and a half later, we're just as focused on them as we were a year and a half ago, which tells us that this was the right path that the Lord put us on, and we haven't added a fifth, and we haven't subtracted any of these 4. There's a line that I have shared with our staff that I want to share with you as I explain some of these things to you, because it brings about change at Mount Hermon, and people don't like change at Mount Hermon. In fact, they were redoing the retaining wall over at day camp this past year, and our son, who's 18, who's been at day camp growing up his whole life, right, and this summer he's going to be a counselor there, he said, they better not change the shape of that wall, you know, because that's the shape I remember and like it that way as an 18-year-old. So I know change is kind of hard at Mount Hermon from inside my own house, but I want you to repeat after me, all right? You cannot make changes without making changes. I know it's profound, but you cannot make changes without making changes. Okay? All right. So you've already heard a lot about our first strategic initiative. They're not in any particular order, but and that's staff health and care. We do care deeply for our staff. That is a very high priority for us. And you have heard about the cabins. One of the things that we did this last year is we took offline 9 guest cabins and moved staff into those, which is not necessarily a popular move because people, it's in September when they went to sign up for their cabin for family camp, it wasn't even on the list for some people. What I'm glad to report to you is that for the most part, what I was told by our registration department is that when people would say, why isn't my cabin on the list? They would say, well, the reason is because Mount Hermon has decided that we need to care for our staff in a greater way. Housing is a really big issue here. And so we've been giving those cabins to allow staff to live in them. And the response from most people has been, well, that's really good. So thank you for that response, if that's you. And if you have one of the other responses, repent. But we've also, as was mentioned, we've had to upgrade because I'm just going to be really blunt here. Some of our staff housing is embarrassingly bad. And so they have to be, that has to change. We have to change that. And in fact, Jane and I were taking a walk the other night. We ran into one of our staff guys who has 4 children living under the roof and his wife. And he was saying how thrilled he was for the new cabin they've been moved to just recently. And they were moved to it because their last cabin was completely rat infested and taken over. That happens in the forest. It also happens when things were built in the 1930s, et cetera. But those are things that we have to address and take care of. So we've been doing that. And I have a dream. And right now it's just a dream. We have not looked at anything seriously at this point. And I already can see the 100 obstacles to the dream, but you start with a dream and then let God take it from there. And that is someday at Mount Hermon to have a staff village. Some kind of staff village with maybe tiny houses or condo units or something like that where we can house our staff because our staff cannot live in this community. In fact, those of us who do live in staff housing, and Jane and I are part of that, we get a very significant break on rent compared to fair market value, and Mount Hermon is you know, taking up that other, the bulk of that. So anyway, taking care of our staff is very important to us. Also, if you were here last year, you might remember that last year, 2017, was a bit different as far as how we started out the year. We had massive rains, remember? Massive rains. It rained. Everybody's got a different number, but around 90 inches, it rained here. And January and February were months where we almost kind of shut down for 2 months. In many ways, we had more cancellations of guest groups for the weekends than in 20 years previous combined, because people couldn't get here. Highways were closed and things. And on top of that, our adventure offerings, people couldn't come for those, and that's a revenue generation for us. And we give raises in April, and we chose to freeze the raises to our staff. And we even took out a line of credit just in case, because we didn't know if we could even make payroll. And thankfully, we never had to dip into that. But we told the staff something that is a promise we made to them, and that was this. As soon as things turn around, our very first priority will be you and giving you a raise. I learned that from the church I pastored in Colorado when we went through a rough time financially, and the board said to us as staff, our very first priority when things turn around will be you guys. And I remember thinking deep down inside, okay, we'll see if that's true. And the moment things turned around there, it was true. And I remember how deeply that affected me and Jane and our staff, of how much they took care of us and legitimately kept their promises about us. And so we're like, we're going to do that here. And so we did. And God turned things around, and we're very grateful for that. In fact, we ended the year strong because God does that financially. And so our staff health and care is of huge importance to us. And so those are some of the things that we're doing. A second area that is a part of our strategic initiatives is what we call financial sustainability. You have been an unbelievable resource of generosity to help Mount Hermon continue its ministry. But most all of the money that you give as associates, and we give as associates, and Jane and I have been giving to this ministry for a long, long time, long before we ever thought we'd be on staff here, because we believe in this place so much, is most of the money that's coming in here has been to take care of the bills, if you will, light bulbs and salaries and things that need to be taken care of, which are all part of the ministry, by the way. However, there's nothing left to take care of a lot of the things that we're talking about to help, you know, upgrade for the future. And that's why things get so far behind in the facilities. And so in the last year and a half, we have been working very diligently, and I would say at times difficultly, and at times I would even say courageously, to make some major decisions to try to turn things around so that when we give our money to Mount Hermon, it might still have to take care of some of those things, but then we can use a lot of the money to further new ministry and to get ahead of the game with our facility so we don't end up in the same situation we are in now. And so we've made some very big and difficult decisions this last year. The two biggest I want to share with you. Number one, you've been hearing for years about Velocity Bike Park down the hill and the property that was purchased and then the dream to put a Velocity Bike Park on there. And that originally was a dream that would be about $2 to $3 million. We had all the plans submitted. We were definitely getting a lot of opposition because environmental groups in particular wanted to keep that pristine piece of land, to keep it as is. And we understand that. But anyway, I won't get into all that. But we did not make this decision based upon opposition because any group in the Santa Cruz area that tries to do any kind of building has the same opposition. It wasn't anti-Mount Hermon. It wasn't anti-Christian. It's just the reality of this area. But the other reality is that as we begin to look at all of the requirements that we were going to have to do and the infrastructure we were going to have to put into this site and the cost that had gone up as the years built on, we were looking for phase one of this project, $8 to $9 million. It got so far out of hand that we just believe that if somebody handed us $8 or $9 million, that's not what we would do with that money. And after a lot of discussion on a board level, on a staff level, we made the hard call to not move forward. And I'm not saying put it on hold. I'm saying not move forward. We have chosen to not do the Velocity Bike Park. Maybe a staff village will be down there someday. I don't know what God has for that land at this point. But that's the decision that we have made, and we're at peace with that. We really are at peace with that. In fact, when that decision was made, we kind of went, whew. And now that we see all the other things that are going on, we don't know how we would have had the time or energy or focus, and certainly not the finances, to do it. I don't know how. So God knows. And God knows. But there are some people who worked really hard on that for a number of years, and I know that was especially hard for them. And I'm grateful for their hard work to try to make it happen and the dreams that were there. The other thing that is just in the last few months became a reality, although we've been talking about it for a number of months now, was one of our departments. We cut back significantly in that department, the amount of staff that were in there. It's our creative services department, a department that's highly effective, a department that puts on our videos, that does all of our printed material, headed up by Murphy Felton. And I began to call other large camp leaders and ask the question about their departments, like marketing and creative services, and came to find out that our department was basically triple the size of other camps our size for the most part. One of it, we were double the size. But for all the other ones, we were about triple the size. What these other camps do is they outsource almost all of their work. They don't do the printing in-house. All of that we were doing in-house. They're finding that that saved them a lot of money by not having all of those employees on track. So we made a very hard call, and we literally shrunk that department by about two-thirds. What happened with that, however, is a really good story. Because Murphy Felton, who was not in our plan to be one of those who would not be here anymore, she came to myself and to Nate Peffercorn, who you met last night. Nate is over Creative Services and part of his oversight. And she came to us and she said, I have a plan. How about if I go start a new company with the people that are being let go and that we become the main outsourcing creative services to Mount Hermon? We won't have to move. We can stay together. We already love Mount Hermon. We know Mount Hermon. We're good at what we do. What if we did that? And so we began to talk about that. We brought in a consultant to help us with all of that. And that's the decision that was made. Some of the people from that new company, it's called Seven Roots Creative, are here in this room right now. Kevin's one of them right here. He's been shooting the camera. Because we are using them, and we have a four-year contract with them, to still be, in many ways, doing the same thing that they were doing here, but just it's going to be saving us as the years goes on hundreds of thousands of dollars a year by doing it this way. Again, you can't make changes without making changes. One thing in this, although all of those seven, it's called Seven Roots Creative, all seven of those are important people. The most upfront and known person is Murphy. And one of my hopes and dreams with this is that Murphy could stay on, like in the summer, and do skits and improv and all that. And at first, her big heart was like, yeah, I want to do that too. But then the realities, she realized starting a new company, she can't do that. So we're still going to have an amazing summer. We're still going to have a ton of fun. It just won't be quite the same, all right? But that's part of our financial sustainability to make these changes. In the midst of all of that, we continue to see God bless and move us forward in ways that, as was shared by these guys, how is it possible that we're able to now to have all of this being done soon on Lakeside, already Gwen, Laurel hopefully next year. In the midst of all of these things, it's pretty significant. The third area of strategic initiatives is what I'll simplify it, say ministry alignment. Ministry alignment is, we have so many things going on here, as you can tell. There's a lot of things we didn't share this weekend, even of what Mount Hermon is a part of. And how can we focus and align things to make sure that we're being the most impactful? And in the midst of that, a lot of little things that we've been looking at, but there's just been one fairly big change that we are making in the summer of 2019. And that is, well, let me explain this. Schools now have different schedules than they used to, and kids go back to school in a lot of school districts in California earlier than they used to. What that means is week 9 of family camp, which is our last week of the summer, our signups are significantly less than the other week. So like just as of a week ago, I found out that we have about 267 people signed up for week 9. Well, other weeks we have 600 to 700 people signed up. So we made a decision and we worked with Dallas Seminary on this decision, and they have been tremendous to work with on this, but we're going to move Dallas Seminary week. This will be their 70th summer this year. Next year, it doesn't matter. They're still going to be around. But we're going to move them to week 9 and move week 9 normal family camp to week 7. And here's why. Because of any of our weeks of family camp throughout the summer, the least amount of children by far is Dallas week. because the majority of people come to that are people who have empty nest for whatever reason. And so we chose to make that and move it to week 9. Well, I'll be making that announcement this summer. I'm sure some will like that and some won't. But it's, again, trying to make changes for ministry alignment to make those things work. You can't make changes without making changes. The other thing that you've heard a lot about is, I would call it our fourth strategic initiative, strengthening our core, which is taking care of what God has entrusted to us in all four of our sites. And we're already seeing some tremendous work happening with this. But from Conference Center to Redwood Camp to Ponderosa to Kidder, rooms, roofs, underground, bathrooms, cabins. And then when you lift up a board, you find out 20 more problems that you didn't know existed. And so we have a plan that we're working through to upgrade all four of our sites. And we figured out the cost of all of that, of what we feel is needed, not even so much wanted, but what we need to do comes out to around $34 million. Oh, don't groan. That's supposed to be exciting. We're going to see God work. But here's the amazing thing. We haven't even started asking anybody for money yet, and that's not happening today. It will be happening, but not today. And already, these improvements have been taking place, and Redwood Camp is right around the corner, and we already have some significant gifting to that. When we haven't even gone to ask anybody for money yet, it gives me great hope that God will provide. And what we have found as we've been talking to people is this, is although these things aren't all that exciting to talk about, people are committed to this ministry to carry on to the next generation and the generation after that because they've been touched so much. And they're willing to invest in even the facilities in this place to see the work of God move forward. It's very encouraging. I have led 5 different building campaigns as a pastor. I've never led one at a camp. It is different. It is very different how you do that. But all 5 of the ones that I led as a pastor, what we planned at the beginning and how we were going to do it and how God ended up fulfilling it all were 2 different paths. But God always did his work. And so we hold this loosely and know that God's going to do what he's going to do because he's a really big God. By the way, that $34 million does not include this room. People are always asking, is the auditorium? You know, I love that auditorium. Don't touch the auditorium, you know. Yeah, you guys clap and raise your hands, do your hankies. I'll tell you this. The most important room spiritually in my life, in the entire world, this room. This room. Yeah. However, it's going to fall down the mountain one of these days. So hopefully when we redo it, it'll have like a retro feel that'll feel similar and all that. And we'll incorporate something and you can buy a piece of it and put it in your house or whatever. So get off my case. All right. But you should know, I don't want to say no one loves this place more than me, but not much more than me. I could tell you so much more, but I want to say thank you to some people and then just share a few other things. I want to thank our staff executive team, who you've heard from this weekend, most of them, Bill Fernald, J.R. Loofborough, Nate Peppercorn, Jeremy Bentley, and Brian Hayes. Yeah. We've been together as a team for a year and a half now, and we meet together a lot, and we work a lot together. We've grown to really trust each other. We're not afraid to say the hard things, and yet with respect and love. We don't always agree with each other, which makes it a good team. And I just want you to know that we're blessed with really great leaders. The next level of leadership as far as an org chart go, not as far as importance of people, but we call it the leadership team. There's another like 25 that are in that group. We meet monthly. And that group is a special group. You would recognize many on that team. And they work very hard too, and they oversee a number of the other staff. And if you count all the staff that are here year round, many of them are part-time, the majority of them part-time, but it's over 300. And so there's a lot of layers here. Thank you. I'm grateful for that team. I'm grateful for our trustees, led by Ron DeMoller. Our trustees oversee the spiritual condition of Mount Hermon. In fact, we met just a few days ago here on Thursday. It's a godly and an amazing group of people that I love being with. And Ron, are you in the room? Yeah, Ron. I know most of you know who Ron DeMoller is, but we couldn't have a more godly and experienced person overseeing this group. So thank you, Ron, for your leadership there. Yeah. I want to thank this man right here, Rick Alvord. Rick is in charge of our board of directors. Our board of directors meets quarterly and prays for this ministry daily. Rick is a proven leader. He's been a major leader at his church, which is a large church in Southern California. He's a leader of a large company, and he leads here. And we have I tell everyone, every once in a while, I'm going to a board meeting for the weekend. They're like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, I love our board. I look forward to our board meetings. And Rick and Laura actually have bought a place here, and they're going to be rightfully tearing it down and building a new one in time, but so they can hang out here even more. But Rick, I want to thank you for your great leadership. So thank you so much. Yeah. He's also become a very dear friend, and we even like baseball together, even though different teams. Yeah. We got to go to an Angel game, some of us, just a few weeks ago. That was really fun. And then I want to say thank you to you. The fact that you would come here to be here says that you love this place. We know that this place is not about the staff. We know that this place is about the Lord. That's what this place is about. Staff come and staff go. Leaders come, leaders go. But the Lord, this is his place. And you praying for us, you encouraging us, you supporting us financially, it's all huge. And so from the bottom of my heart, I want to say thank you so much for your prayers and for being here. I'm going to wrap up here as we want to go eat. It's been so long. But I do want to share a verse with you. I got a card not long after we arrived here at Mount Hermon from a lady who is a dear lady in our life. Her name is Jackie Verstraten. She's she hit her 90s, honey? Yeah, she's in her 90s now. She is the wife of a former pastor of Mission Hills, a church that I pastored, and her husband, Pastor Chuck, was on my staff for 4 years when I was a senior pastor, and he was a former senior pastor there, and he became, in 4 years, one of my most favorite people I've ever been around in my life before he went to heaven. And Jackie's a prayer warrior, and just a few months after we arrived here, she sent us a card, and in there she wrote these words from Psalm 90, verse 17. Let the favor of the Lord be upon us and establish the work of our hands. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Let the favor of the Lord be upon us and establish the work of our hands. Yes, establish the work of our hands. And I want to just say to you that that's really ultimately what I care most about, that God's favor would rest upon this, his place, and he would establish the work of our hands for him, to see people transformed for him from the inside out, to see people restored and renewed and refreshed, for marriages to get a new kickstart, for teenagers to go from hopelessness to hope in a relationship with Christ, for children to meet Jesus for the first time, to see families get back together, to see the wounded rebound, to see addictions go away, that the favor of the Lord would be upon this place, and he would establish the work of our hands. I don't wake up in the morning excited about budgets or building projects or spreadsheets, but I wake up in the morning praying that God's favor would rest upon this place and he would establish the work of our hands. In a moment, I'm going to pray and close our time, and then let me give you some instructions. We're going to go to lunch, but I want to tell you what's going to happen after lunch. We're officially done at lunch, but whatever official is. After lunch, around 1:30, outside over by Ivy Dining, those doors, that side of it, if you're facing the dining hall, the left side, we're going to be having a fairly brief but I think impactful honoring of Dr. Ed Hayes. Ed Hayes was the executive director here before Roger Williams. He was the executive director for 14 years here under his leadership. We saw a lot of things happen here. Brian Hayes, his son, is now a key leader on our staff. And Ed went to be with the Lord recently. Ed's wife Marilyn is here this weekend. And we're going to honor him, and we have a special spot there. We're going to have the Ed Hayes Grove in memory of him. And we'll explain at that ceremony why we chose that. And then we're going to honor him. Last year, we got to honor Roger Williams and the Williams Welcome Center and Rachel, his wife. We got to honor them with the ceremony. And the Williams Welcome Center now, the Gwynn Lodge was already given in memory of, honored in memory of Bill Gwynn, and we're getting a plaque ready to go also to put up there. So we'll have a nice plaque in memory of Roger and then about Rachel and then of Bill here, and then we're going to also have some nice things over here about Ed. That's over 50 years of godly leadership between those three men. And we want to remember where we've come from and those who have gotten us here along with the Lord. And so we're going to honor. So about 1:30 out there, we'll just spread out. We don't know exactly how all it's going to work well, but we'll just spread out over the bridge and all that, and we'll make that work. So is that good? Okay. No. Yeah. Well, they're saying no Romberger Memorial anytime soon, because to get a name on a building, you're supposed to not be alive. So anyway. Oh, and the centerpieces, normally they're $20, but for you, they're $120 because we have balconies that we didn't expect to take care of. So if you'd want to give a little extra, but no, $20. By the way, I should say this. You are our greatest supporters, and we are in need because we have projects that cost more than we thought, and we are in need. Maybe, we're still figuring it out, maybe up to $500,000. And so God will provide, but I found out he provides through people. And you care about us, so pray about that. And your provision would be greatly appreciated and is needed. So let me pray, and then off to the dining hall we go. Lord, thank you for these 2 days. Thank you for the people that you have brought. Thank you for how this is a place that means so much to us. Lord, because you're here. It's not just because it's pretty. I love the description that was given today of how this room is just saturated with your word, Lord. That is a great thing to think about, a room. And Lord, as we touch kids in the months and years ahead through the Redwood Camp, buildings that are going to be going in, Lord, we look so forward to all the more ministry down there, and we could go on and on about all these things. Lord, I want to thank you for our staff. Thank you for their love for you and their commitment to your work. Lord, I want to thank you for our trustees and our board members. Lord, you've been so, so good to us. And so I give you praise, Lord. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.